Accession number 11513, Reel 2.
Mr. Bell, Reel 2.
Yes, you asked about the performance of the battalion when they first got onto the Japs. I think it was pretty good. They had a nasty battle at Kanwa and some casualties amongst the officers. We had been given some black ointment or whatever to put on our faces and hands to make the Europeans less conspicuous, and we hadn't really used that. We thought that wasn't quite the thing to do. However, when we had those casualties, white people seemed to be picked off. We then used it as a routine. We also had started off wearing shorts, which of course again distinguished you from the troops, and we didn't do that again either. As I say, we had a number of lessons to learn, which we learned fairly rapidly.
Can you give any examples of the lessons that you had to learn?
Well, that was one. The other thing, we wore less conspicuous badges of rank. And we just had little squares of cloth on our shoulders as pips instead of the actual pips themselves. And the British sergeants toned their stripes down so that they weren't as obvious. Again, nobody had had any experience of fighting in jungle conditions, and you had to learn fairly basic lessons rather quickly. You're walking along a track. Your visibility was perhaps 20 or 30 yards at the most, and so you had to be on your toes and have a certain drill if something happened, which you had to work out for yourself largely.
What did you think of the physical conditions in the Burmese jungle? Were they very trying?
Well, they were. They were tiring, yes. When you were going east or west, you were going across the grain of the country, and in a course of several miles, you might go up and down 1,000, 1,500 feet several times. Down a steep slope, across a stream or a stream bed, up the other side, across a razor top, and down again. And that, when you're carrying a lot of weight, is fairly exhausting. And that's very why I said I didn't think that troops of less physical force than the West Africans, they were very powerful men, would have been able to do it because of the that sort of thing. When you turn south, you're going with the grain, and of course the going was a great deal easier. Though when you were fighting against the Jap, he often took up a position on top of one of these razor ridges, and it was a question of one or two men going along at a time, and one man with a machine gun could stop you. There wasn't any question of going round the side unless you went a considerable distance to go round the back, because you had these steep slopes. It was hard country that way. It was hot, and in the dry season water was not always all that plentiful. Sometimes you made your tea, and you found a quarter of an inch of mud in the bottom of the mug, that sort of thing. However, one survived very well, got used to it very quickly. I don't think I slept in a bed for about 18 months and just stepped on the ground, as everybody else did, of course. And I think that was one of the one lesson we learned gradually. In West Africa, an officer was allowed 5 headloads on campaign. We very rarely, that was reduced to 1 when we first went to Burma. That was a bedroll, and then that disappeared too, quite rightly. So we were down to what literally you carried on your back yourself, which was probably a spare pair of boots and washing things.
Did you just put some leaves down to sleep on for the night?
If there happened to be any, otherwise you didn't. Sometimes the grass, or you've got a little shallow indentation made. Your orderly would dig out a little bit so that you were just under the surface. A sort of half coffin, if you like. Which they did for themselves.
And, were the Africans good in the jungle?
Yes. They were much... They could pick out movement much more quickly than we did. And, of course, and sound. And we didn't see much in the way of animals or birds, but they were usually able to distinguish between human noise and animal noise, which is a great help, of course.
What about health? Was there much sickness in the unit?
No, not much.
Did you fall sick yourself?
Yes, I did. Altogether, I think, in the nearly 2 years we were there, I think I was sick for about on 3 occasions. One, I got some sort of feverish cold flu, perhaps. Lasted about 3 days, and I just stayed behind and walked up afterwards. When we were on Frontier Hill on the second time in, I got infective hepatitis, and a lot of the troops did also. Again, we were none of us evacuated, we just were ill for about a week, I suppose, and it so happened that we were stationed at the time. That it didn't matter a great deal. And then when we came out the last time, I had a touch of fever for malaria for 3 or 4 days. That was all.
What were you taking against malaria?
I think we were on Mepocrine in those days. Stuff that turned you yellow.
What was it, a tablet once a day?
Tablet once a day, yes.
And you still got the malaria despite taking the Mepocrine?
Oh, yes. It wasn't an entire prophylactic. But I think you probably got a less severe attack than you might have had otherwise.
Were there civilians about in the villages? Or did you not see any?
I think, basically, no, there weren't. I think we came across some Kumi. I think that's the name of the people in the hills, about once or twice. And once down at a place called Theatabin, there were a few people there. I remember once at night we were... we came across a small hut with people in it, and my British sergeant, who was a regular, had been in India and had a few words of Urdu or Hindi, and went in. They were Indians, and managed to get something to eat from them. So we were thirsty and hungry. By and large, all the villages we came across, and even small towns, were deserted. We went to a place called Apokwa, which was quite a large village that was completely deserted, as far as I remember. Also, when we were on our way out, we went through Myohong, which had been the ancient capital of the Arakan, and that was completely deserted. Where the people went to, I have no idea, but they went about.
Did you pay for the food that the Indians supplied you?
Oh, yes.
With what?
Rupees.
Silver rupees?
Yes. Well, we were advised to take a few in with us, which we did.
What were these Kumi people like?
Well, they were very, very, very primitive. They lived in little bamboo houses, sometimes on stilts. And I say we hardly saw any of them at all.
Were they friendly?
Reasonably, when they realised they had no cause to be frightened. But I think we only came across them once or twice, and then only one, a very few of them. But there must have been quite a large population in that area, because, down on the paddy side, because there was an awful lot of paddy fields, and obviously you'd need quite a lot of people to work them.
Now, you told me earlier that you transferred from your staff job to become a platoon commander in February 44.
Yes.
Can you tell me the details of that, please?
What do you mean, precisely?
Can you tell me how and why that came about?
Yes, I wasn't any good as a staff officer. I went back to the battalion. I didn't think I got the interest in it. Anyway, I went back to the battalion, and with B Company, and I was a sort of cross between platoon commander and Company 2IC.
Which, do you remember which platoon you were with? You were commanding?
I think it was number 11.
Where was the company when you joined them?
I don't remember. Somewhere, probably on the east bank of the Caradan. But I don't remember where. I don't know if I can find out in this thing. Yes, it was the 13th of February, in point of fact. I rejoined the 4th Battalion, B Company, when they were at a place called Tinma, and I was with the battalion from then onwards. Tinma is between a place called Mizawa and Leppan. They were on the east of the Caradan River.
What was the company doing at the time when you joined them? Resting?
I don't think they were resting, no. We had a river. Yeah, we were in the ordinary duty. And then we went, oh yes, B Company was sent. We had a night march to go and capture a place called Point 110. Which was on a ridge, a bit in from the paddy. And the company commander asked me to do the navigating, and we had to cross two ridges and then take the third. And I thought we'd gone over three ridges, and we sort of sat on the third. And when dawn came, I immediately realised we hadn't gone far enough, because we should have been looking at another hill further over with a conspicuous pagoda on top. And, of course, it wasn't there. So at dawn, we moved again and got on to the right one. And I duly saw the pagoda. There was a large, a well-used track running north-south on the eastern side of this ridge. And I remember I was sent down there with a platoon, with a section, to see what was going on there. And we just got into position above the track when two I think they were the Burma National Army or something of that sort. They weren't in uniform, but they were armed. They came along, and we endeavoured to take them prisoner, but they were far too quick and got away and disappeared into the bush. However, we got their arms.
What did they consist of?
Two Tommy guns, I think, which had obviously been captured from us in Singapore or somewhere like that. We then, a chap called Lieutenant Moore, who commanded one of the platoons in B Company, was pushed down the ridge to the south, where he had quite a sharp action with some Japs. I think he got the MC as a result of that. And then we were recalled to the battalion and went back down to this large village called Apokwa, which the battalion had taken early that morning, with a sort of dawn attack. I don't think there were many Japs there, but there were some, and we had some casualties. And there was a final position, Jap position, holding out. And I was told to attack it with my platoon, which I did. When I took it, I found one dead Jap inside. That was all.
Do you think the others had escaped?
Oh, the others had escaped, yes, they'd escaped earlier.
How did you take the position?
Well, I first of all had a recce, where from the point where an A Company platoon had tried to attack it and had been repulsed. And so I went round to the south of the position, which was in fact a large square water tank, the sides, I suppose, being about 30 or 40 yards long. And I attacked it from the south through some scrub and got on to the top of it without any bother at all. And, as I say, I rapidly discovered there was nobody in it except this one dead Jap. How it would have been if they'd been there, I don't know.
What did he have on him which was of any use?
Nothing. He'd been wounded, and obviously died of his wounds in the chest. He'd been bandaged. And that was it. There was nothing else. Anything of interest had been taken away by his friends. But these large tanks, I forgot there was a name for them, they were quite common down in that part. And, of course, they were a natural little fortress. The banks, I suppose, would be 6 or 8 feet high above the level of the ground. And then they had a water in the middle, and the banks were thick, and the Jap had dug trenches in the thickness of the walls. So they were quite strong positions that were manned.
What do you remember happening next?
Ah, we'd only soon done that. Then the battalion was told to withdraw. I think on the main Arakan front, the battle of the 7th Indian Division box had just started or was in progress, and it was decided that we could not go further south. We were therefore pulled back. So we'd no sooner taken the Sepulchre village than we were ordered back, moved northwards again. I think that's what it was. Yes, apparently the order to withdraw came about 8 o'clock, and we were ordered to go back to a place called Thin Gannet. And when we got there, we found out that the 11th East African Division Scouts, which were attached to the the brigade, had been driven out of Theatabin, and that they and the 1st Gambia Regiment were being attacked by at least two Jap battalions on Pagoda Hill. Next day, the Japs took Pagoda Hill, and a general withdrawal to the line of the Pi Trong was ordered.
When was this? Have you got a date for that?
It's the beginning of March. I think the Jap took Pagoda Hill on the 3rd of March.
What was the withdrawal like? Was it done in an orderly fashion?
Oh, yes. We used to... We withdrew often at night, sometimes as much as 10 miles, and then next day we sent patrols back to see whether the Jap was following us up or not. I did a lot of those.
Were they usually following up?
I found them once. I'd gone right down about dusk, I think. I got to the line of, I think it was the Pi Trong, probably, and I was in the paddy, and suddenly there was sort of a lot of movement to the front. One of these large earth tanks that I talked about before, a whole lot of Japs came out on that to see what was going on, and I just stayed quiet until they'd quietened down, and then I came back again across the paddy. I suppose that was about a 20-mile patrol altogether. It took most of the day, and I didn't get back until well after dark.
What were the Japanese like moving about in the jungle at night? Were they as good as the Africans?
I don't know that I ever had any experience of them like that. When they had a position, they often cut short lengths of bamboo and laid it on the track in front of their position so that anybody coming along would step on it and make a noise. We found that several times that they'd done.
Did that work?
Oh, yes, I think so. It made a noise and it gave you a warning. We did it too sometimes, I think. Also, we used to put sharpened stakes of bamboo into the ground at an angle, rather like the bayonets on Wellington squares, which are a very nasty obstacle. You've got these 3 or 4 feet long strips of bamboo with a point on the end sticking in the ground at an angle against you. Very difficult to get through if you wanted to. And bamboo gave nasty wounds. I think they were called pangers, I'm not quite sure. On the 14th of March, early in the morning, our C company, was the left forward company, reported enemy in quite large numbers immediately south and east. And soon after, they were attacked by quite a large force with machine guns and mortars. And after a fierce fight, C Company was driven off its position and it had to go back into the battalion headquarter area. And then, sometime later that day, I was sent back with a patrol to find out whether the Jap was still there. I had quite a long way to go, and I eventually got into the C Company position found a lot of their kit lying about, no Japs, and a couple of our people dead. I managed to get their identity discs off, and I was sort of doing that when a rather harassed BNCO with another patrol came to find out what I was up to, saying the CO had ordered an airstrike or shelling on the C Company position on the assumption that the Jap was there still, and would I get out quickly, otherwise we'd cop it. So we got back. I think one of the troubles on those patrols, you had a long way to go, and you were not given, as often as not, a time limit by which you had to be back. Had you had a time limit, then that sort of situation wouldn't have arisen. Or alternatively, you mightn't have got as much accomplished because you couldn't run at these things. You had to take your time finding out what was there and what was in the way of anything. But I did a lot of that, quite lengthy patrolling. I think they reckoned that in the 6 months of that first campaign, the ordinary infantry officer walked about 3,000 miles. It sounds an enormous amount, but it seems to be what we did.
How did that action at Mindan develop?
I think that was the end of it. We were then, we withdrew again. Yes, that's right. We moved back again, further north, and relieved one of the Gold Coast battalions from the 5th Brigade. At this time, the idea was that the division would form a strong box in a place called the Kingry Loop and stick out the monsoon there. However, that was not to be. We did actually go into this box. We didn't stay in it very long. I think the Kohima battle probably started about then, and obviously with that on, they wanted to avoid a continuous commitment for air supply in our area. At least we thought that was probably the reason. So before, you asked what happened after that other action, and we went back a bit further, and then our D Company was attacked, and Sabazake, a place called Sabazake, and after a very heavy action, the company was driven off that position, and later that day, I was told to counterattack with my platoon on this company position, which I did. I think I had 11 people wounded in the platoon. I was hit twice myself, but not actually wounded. Skin off the side of my head and a pistol smashed on my hip. So I was lucky.
Can you describe that counterattack in detail, as far as you remember it?
Yes. I came out of some thickish scrub, and in front of me there was a large slope covered in dead leaves, and the Jap was on the top of it, as far as I knew. And we saw vague movement of Jap up there. And I started off, I put out two sections to give covering fire, and started leading the third section up across these dead leaves when we were quite heavy fire on us, and that's when the damage happened. And we were stopped. And I then left that section in a reasonable position there, and myself went back and took another section round a Chong with the platoon, with the African platoon sergeant, and with the idea of getting round behind. However, we were soon under fire down this Chong, this little deep river valley, a stream valley. I suppose it was about 18 feet deep, quite and not very wide. I threw a grenade sort of over the angle where I thought the fire was coming from. It hit a branch and landed back on my feet, and I was just able to pick it up, throw it up in the air before it went off. So it was three narrow escapes I had that day. And then I realized we weren't going to do anything, so I withdrew. And that was, I discovered that I had 11 people wounded, and we went back and we joined the battalion, which by that time had left its position and gone over into this Kingry Loop. That was where I eventually found them. What I think had happened was that I was going to do this diversion to give a sort of cover while the battalion moved out, because it wasn't a very practical proposition to recapture a position with a platoon that had been lost by a company.